With more positivity, joy and happiness than the closing scene of Bugsy Malone, the Total Rugby League show returns this week to discuss all the talking points of the day. And joining me here at League Express Towers this week, Mr. Martin Sadler's here, Matthew Shorey's here, and a welcome return once again to Mr. Alex Davis. So, hello everybody and welcome to this week's show. As well as a preview for the Magic Weekend coming up, we're also going to be joined by Mr. Steve Brady, shortly talking about that rugby league match at the Nou Camp from the weekend, plus loads more cuddly positivity. And speaking of positivity, we'll come to you first, Matthew. And, well, my goodness, we shared a lovely Saturday together, I have to say, and we were there with nearly 8,000 other people at Bloomfield Road for the Summer Bash. What an occasion.
Brilliant. Thoroughly enjoyable. As I said last week, it's my favourite weekend of the year. And I was asked why, actually, on Sunday, because people don't get it. I think for me, it's a little bit smaller than Magic Weekend. I think that works, because you can get to know more people, you can get around more people, you can see what everyone's doing, you catch more of the fancy dress and everyone having a good time.
And I suspect they're happier to see you as well. I suspect that, you know, the championship clubs, because they don't get as much coverage the Super League, I suspect they're probably more welcoming.
I took a mate with me to... he'll roll his eyes when I tell this story. I took a mate with me to the weekend, and a lovely lady called Kirsten had come over from Toronto, all the way to Toronto just for Summer Bash. And she asked for a picture with me, and my mate was absolutely livid. Like, why do people want pictures with you? Like, all the people. But that's kind of what it's all about. Like, you can meet these people. It's easy to bump into people. And let's not forget, the rugby was great.
Really was.
Some of the games, I mean, Saturday was really good. Sunday, probably not quite as good. But the Saturday games were fantastic, to be honest.
One thing that struck me on the Saturday games, I mean, there was some cracking matches, but the Bradford-Halifax match for me wasn't just about the result and the performance on the pitch, especially from Halifax, but the atmosphere from the two fan bases. There was, dare I say it, a bit of a continental vibe to the both atmospheres.
It was funny, wasn't it, because both clubs have sort of developed chants that you don't normally hear at rugby games. So, like, when Halifax get close to the line, it sounds like they're doing the Icelandic clap thing, doesn't it? It sounds really good, and the Bulls are always good. They have the flags going and everything like that. It really was good to watch, not just on the field but off it. And on the field, yeah, as you said, great game. I thought Bradford were all right, to be fair, but Halifax were good and probably edged it in the end.
And actually, it was a great result, wasn't it? Because after Bradford beat Leeds the previous week, you know, it was good to see another team, you know, really rising to the occasion as Halifax did. And it sets up the Challenge Cup game really brilliantly. You know, I think you're going to get a lot of Halifax fans following Halifax to Oddsall for that game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for one of those clubs to be getting to the semi-final of the Challenge Cup is actually quite remarkable.
It shows the strength in depth, really. Look, Bradford beat Leeds, and I'm taking nothing away from Bradford because they were obviously very good on the day. I thought Leeds were lousy, but the fact that another championship team, who by the way are eighth, can then go and beat the team that just beat the Leeds Rhinos.
I think there's no doubt that the championship is as good a competition as it's ever been. Yeah. Look at the depth in the teams there. Leeds Centurions beat Widnes fairly comfortably. Halifax, of course, beat Bradford, who beat a Super League team. Halifax themselves have beaten a Super League team.
The championship nearly did.
It's a very, very strong league. And to be honest, you've got the Toronto and Toulouse at the top, but to be honest, it is anybody's.
Yeah. For me, Toronto are by far the best team in the comp.
Well, they demonstrated that, didn't we? With that performance against Toulouse.
But after that, even Toulouse, I mean, Toulouse, but correct me if I'm wrong, play one of the top teams this week. Is it Sheffield, perhaps?
No, they play Lee.
Lee, sorry. Yeah, they play Lee, of course. They play Lee on Saturday. If Toulouse lose that, and then all the other teams seem to play each other, Toulouse are right back in the mix with the rest of them.
Mm. Sheffield v Toronto on Friday night as well.
And you look at it, what Halifax are in eighth, and how many points have they got? 16? And then...
Two points separated.
Fourth for an 18. It's just bizarre.
It is. It's a tremendous competition. And actually, if Widnes hadn't had 12 points deducted they'd be right up there as well as the ninth team. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it really is a great... And I actually thought the Rochdale-Swinton game was quite enjoyable.
It was the most entertaining.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not the best quality, but entertainment-wise, it was fantastic.
Yeah. I quite like the Rochdale kit, actually, if I'm really honest.
Oh, you're the only one.
Sean Ainscough pulling some malt loaf out of his sock as a try celebration is the best thing I have ever seen.
It was amazing, wasn't it? Mm. Maybe that's why I liked it, but... Yeah, tremendous stuff.
I mean well, Rochdale Hornets. I do mean well. Anyway, crowd of over 15,000 for both days. So I think we can safely say Summer Bash a big success.
No, I thought it'd be more.
I thought it would get to 20, actually. Personally.
I thought it'd be more like 18. Only because if you look at it, Ben.
Our first bump in the road on this week's positivity show. Oh, my goodness.
So it's gone up by, I think it was about 3,200.
Yeah.
But you've taken London out. And you've added Bradford, you've added Widnes, and you've added York, who are three of the better supported teams in the competition. So I thought it'd be more than up 3,000. I think what it tells me is that the Summer Bash is the biggest kept secret in the rugby league calendar.
It's got the potential to grow a lot more, hasn't it, is really the point.
I think there was a lack of confidence in it this year. Surely now the RFL can go into it next year with a spring in the step, thinking this could be an even bigger event next year.
I think my problem, and I've said this for many a year, probably since year two, there are... To have it the week before or after Magic just doesn't work for me. Mm. People can't afford to do both.
There certainly won't be many going to Summer Bash and the Magic weekend. No. It's just not possible.
It's too expensive for too many people. And ultimately, if you're just a casual viewer, you're going to go to Magic over Summer Bash. So they need to find a way. Now, it comes down to venue after that, because the reason they do them so close is because they use football pitches and they get reseeded very, very shortly after the season. So they have to do them then. So that's why maybe begrudgingly...
You can't move away from Blackpool.
I think it's fantastic.
It's a perfect venue. It's a holiday destination, so people will make it like...
And it's not just that. It's that the stadium's quite near to the front, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you don't have to walk far to, you know, get onto the Golden Mile, so to speak.
Absolutely. We'll come back to the Championship and have a little roundup of results later in the show. But while Toronto were taking on Toulouse, something popped up on my Twitter feed from the European Federation of Rugby League, which said, Greece v Norway, tune in now. Yeah. I was like, oh, right, okay. So I was watching, remarkably, I was watching Toronto v Toulouse, and on my computer, right in front of me, I had Norway v Greece on. And that in itself was a fantastic game of Rugby League, well put on and well hosted by the London Scholars.
There were 12 domestic players in that team.
There was, really? 12?
Yeah. Plus as well.
And they were scoring some excellent tries as well, particularly down the middle.
Greece ran away with it, and in the second half, Norway won the second half. But it was a great game of rugby league, and congratulations to Greece.
The potential for expansion in Europe is incredible, isn't it? And it's interesting that at the weekend, I think there were 23 national bodies in Turkey, in Istanbul, for a convention, annual meeting, I think it probably was. You know, a few years ago, those figures would have seemed crazy, actually. And, you know, now we've got countries all over Europe and the Middle East and Africa taking up rugby league. It's a tremendous thing.
And speaking of London, well, the stars aligned. You said it's going to take a lot for the stars to align for London Broncos last week. They did. And they beat Wakefield. And it's now a three-horse race down the bottom end all of a sudden.
Well, Leeds will be absolutely... I'll bleep their pants, won't they, right now?
The really strange thing is that, you know, until now, every week I've thought, well, Leeds have been struggling a bit, but surely it's only a matter of time before they get their act together and scoot up the table. But, you know, maybe that's not going to happen. And if I were, Leeds, if I were Gary Hetherington or anybody connected with the club, I'd really be getting extremely worried. I'm sure they are. Because, you know, they're looking absolutely clueless. And London Broncos didn't look clueless against Wakefield, did they?
And Hull KR progressed in the Challenge Cup against Salford, so they
and
got a result
Hull KR
there.
Hull KR didn't look that bad against Huddersfield, actually. I was there on Friday night, and, you know, that was a pretty good game, and Hull KR did their bit, you know, but weren't quite good enough to beat Huddersfield. So Leeds are really looking under threat, I think.
I mean, we'll come back to Leeds, because Leeds are obviously taking on... A fellow relegation candidate this weekend in the Farm of London. So that's going to be a mightily important game. But just to stay with London, the Scholars on Saturday night went top for the first time in their history. It was only for 24 hours, but a fantastic victory once again. And, well, it's onwards and upwards, isn't it, in the capital all of a sudden?
Well, the funny thing is about the Scholars going top of the league, they're probably the only team that's ever been the top of a league that's had a negative points difference, because they've got yes. a negative points difference of 19. So, you
how's
know,
that happened?
That's quite amazing, isn't it? They've played nine, won six, but obviously the games they've lost have been by mm-hmm. bigger margins than the games they've won.
The team bottom of the table, by the way, has a points difference of plus 52. I know that's key for them, but still, it stands. And more crucially as well for the Scholars, they've opened up a 7-point gap between themselves and outside the playoffs. Well, that's huge.
It was comfortable for them against Doncaster, 16-point win. Doncaster, one of the favourites to go up alongside Newcastle from League One this year, but they still managed to do it quite comfortably. And of course, they had a lot of good young Wigan players playing for the moment. I know Joe Brown at fullback is doing a really good job for them. They've got Neil Thorman at hooker, who's a big leader for them, and they get players like Dan Hindmarsh that's played in Championship this year at lock as well.
And carrying on, Saints v Salford, potential game of the season has just taken place over the past weekend.
It was a great game.
Very good. I was disappointed that St Helens managed to win in some ways, because Salford had done so much to win that game, but it almost felt inevitable at times that Saints were going to come back, and they were showing the flag every 5 seconds, never right off the Saints. Yeah. And it proved the point.
Was it a try?
I think it could easily have not been given, but the fact is the referee said he thought it was a try and went to the video referee, and it's that old thing. If he'd said, I thought it wasn't a try, and gone to the video referee, I don't think they'd have given it.
No, absolutely. But, the fact that they needed conclusive evidence to overturn it meant that it had to be a try, I think.
I'm not a fan of the on-field decision. I've given it a few years and I've ummed and ahed. But my take on it is, if they're sending it to the video referee, they're not certain. So if they're not certain, are they just guessing? Well, surely you'd rather let someone who can have a proper look at it, mate.
Do we not fall into the trap then of what's happened in football, and the fact that every single thing suddenly, because you take the onus away from the on-pitch referee to the video referee, and that's what happens in football. There's essentially two referees all of a sudden.
There's a difference between guessing and having a hunch as to whether it is a try or not. I think an improvement would be to say whether the referee could say, I think it's a try, I think it's a no try, or I just don't know.
It would be better.
That maybe would work if the referee... Yeah.
Because sometimes a referee is forced into saying yes or no, even though they don't have an idea, because sometimes they might not.
The only problem with that is, if refs are admitting they don't know on TV games, if there's in a contentious call...
Well, sometimes you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. You might be on the wrong side of the ball, so the ball is covered by the player. You can't be in two places at once.
But it is true that if the TV weren't there, the referee would have to make a decision with the touch judges.
And that's the problem, games are refereed in different ways. So some tries would be given in a TV game that wouldn't be given in a game.
I couldn't agree more.
On
that's TV. That's a good argument for not having the video referee at all.
I'm still in favour of the video ref, because I think that they do help make some correct calls. I mean, if you look at the Halifax Bradford game, that Will Sharp try that got called out. I mean, it's just there's just nothing wrong with it. It's just a try, and he's gone up no try. He would have done, and it would have clearly been given. So, you know, I do think that they can. I still think they could have a positive. I do think there should be a shot clock on them though, on the video refs.
Yeah. The other thing about the Saints game, though, before we move off it, I thought the Saints' first try to Lachlan Coote, which was made by Regan Grace with that incredible evasive footwork, was just fantastic. And, you know, it's the sort of try that, I mean, Regan Grace's movements leading up to that try, if we ever want to promote rugby league to a wider, younger audience as an exciting, enthralling, thrilling sport that's so tremendous, you know, athletically, then that try ought to be one that's used, and the Super League ought to be using that now. I mean, it should have gone viral.
We'll come back to both Saints and Salford shortly when we do our Magic Weekend fixture preview. But we do have to, because I know there's going to be a few people being a bit queasy about how positive we're all being at the moment. So one last bit of positivity before we move on. Catalan Dragons taking on Wigan Warriors at the Camp Nou. 31,555, a new attendance record. League Express's French correspondent Steve Brady will be coming on shortly to give his thoughts. But a success?
Yeah. Well, I think you could say that, couldn't
you? There's no losers.
Wigan lost.
I mean, they were... It's not just that it set a new attendance record, it actually blasted it, didn't it? Because it was more than 25% up on the old record, which is a pretty impressive achievement, really, in its way. I mean, you know, they were never going to fill the ground, were they? It's such a massive ground, is the Nou Camp. But it was, tremendous, an absolutely tremendous match, although I noticed that the Times had a report on Monday morning, at which they said, I think the headline was something like Camp Nou is introduced to mushy peas or something. You know, as typical, trying to run it down.
What's wrong with mushy peas? I hope they had mint sauce. Well, anyway, on that note, let's hear now from League Express's Steve Brady for his thoughts on that match on Saturday. I caught up with him on Tuesday.
Incredible. I mean, I bumped into Bernard Gwash on the way out to the stadium, and he's possibly the most passionate Catalan around. And he just three words, historic, enorm, incredible, incroyable. And it's just the same thing, incredible, historic and enormous. And the sight of those Catalan fans doing the Mexico wave in the sunshine will live with me forever, because we live down here with them. We understand the people and the passion, and they haven't got lots of money. They all got criticised for not going to Wembley, but they couldn't do it. You know, it was two or three weeks to organise an expensive trip at that time of year. But they showed the support at Camp Nou, and I got a lump in my throat, I must admit, because we live and work and chat to them day in, day out, and just to see them having their time in the sun there, enjoying themselves and back in the club, it was quite emotional and very, very special.
And I was speaking to Mike Rylance last week, and we were saying just the fact that Catalan Dragons, as a club itself, is relatively young. I mean, it's only, 20 years old as an entity. But the last year or so, they are coming up with more and more goosebumpy moments.
Yeah, well, obviously Wembley, we were at Wembley for that one. And that I think, really has lit the touch paper now for the club. It has been building slowly. Mr. Gwash, his patronage has ensured the club's survival. He won't tell you how much he spent on the club, because it's astronomical. But they've got good support. They've got good commercial support. They've got a really good commercial manager in Christoph. And the money is coming in now. We've got some great sponsors coming in. Altrad, one of the biggest companies in France, the richest man in France, has put his money behind the club. They sponsor French Rugby Union. We've just received another sponsorship from USAP, the Perpignan Rugby Union Club, BPI France, which is a bank. So we're getting some blue chip support on top of regular local support. The city of Perpignan, is really behind the club. And the commercial side of it has allowed the club to develop and attract players. I think the one thing that led to all the things gelling now, and because we've had lots of coaches, good coaches in the past, Trent Robinson, Steve McNamara, his appointment here has been the final piece in the jigsaw for Bernard. Bernard has trusted him despite a horrific start to last season. When everybody said Bernard's going to pull the trigger, but no, he stuck with him. They've got a very good rapport together. They meet and are very sociable together. And Steve's a very intelligent and very methodical coach, detailed. Some people say it might not be the most exciting approach. He's not explosive or dramatic, but it works. The players respect him. More importantly, the president respects him, and the fans buy into it. He's such a decent guy. I know we all say that about the coaches that we know, but he's genuinely a wonderful guy who knows an awful lot about rugby. I think he was unfortunate to finish with his England career like that way as a coach, and I didn't necessarily agree with that. Then he went to Australia, picked up some more experience and came back, and the Catalans are benefiting from that. It's taken some time for them to pull it all together, but the recruitment's been exceptional. You know, any club that can bring in David Mead, Kenny Edwards, Sam Cassiano, Sam Tompkins, Michael McAlorum, that speaks volumes about how attractive the club is to players of that calibre. You know, these players could have gone elsewhere, but they've chosen to come to Catalan Dragons because the club is a very positive club, a very youthful and optimistic club, and they've got a great manager who is pulling it all together.
It came off on the pitch as well. I mean, so how many times do we have these occasions where does it quite fulfil on the field of play? But it really did on Saturday, of course, unless you're a Wigan fan, that is.
Well, of course. It's been the ultimate yo-yo season. Catalans have got the reputation for being champs one minute and chumps the next. So I think, obviously, we all feared a little that the pressure might have got to them at Camp Nou. But I think they excel in the big games. I was at training this morning and speaking to Matty Smith, and he said it was frustrating for him to watch on the sidelines. But he knew he had some confidence inside with knowledge of the Wigan outfit having been previously. He knew they'd win because the club seems to respond to big game situations. Well, if you look at the semi-final against St. Helens in the Challenge Cup last year at Bolton, they were possibly the best performance from a rugby league side I've seen for 5 years in the game. And Saints had no chance after wiping the floor with everyone all season. And I think that possibly contributed to the maybe not eventually winning a trophy. And then they went on in the final to beat Warrington. So they've shown that they can beat the big sides, and they've beaten Saints and Warrington this season. So in the big games, they perform. It's just they lose concentration sometimes. And when we're losing 46-0 at home to Salford, and then the next week you're going to go and beat Wigan or Warrington, it's something has to give. And Steve McNamara's admitted that consistency is the key. They have the skills, they have the talent. If they could just grab the consistency, I genuinely believe Catalans can go all the way this year.
And when it comes to, I mean, you've written in League Express as well about what Guash has said about having more of these occasions, not just at the Nou Camp, but in other parts of Catalonia as well. I mean, what is the plan, do you feel, now for the Catalan Dragons? Is it to go on the road and just become the club for Catalan, or is it to spread even? I mean, what I'm trying to ask is there an FC Barcelona club in the offing here and a Girona club perhaps?
I think we're away from that. There's a Spanish rugby league that's in its embryonic stage. There's some amateur players getting about, some people trying to push the game over there. I don't think you're going to see a Barcelona rugby league team overnight, not anytime soon. But what it will do is raise exposure in that region. And I think if the club can tie into the independence movement, the spirit of freedom in Catalonia, and become part of that, because obviously, politically, there's a major movement. We saw the signs at Camp Nou at the weekend, and the Catalonian people feel oppressed and feel that they have to rebel. It's in the nature, in the spirit. They've had tough times over here for hundreds of years, and that nature, which, I mean, Super League chief exec Robert Elston referred to this, very similar to the nature of rugby league, born out of desperation and hunger. The Catalans have that same rebellious and creative and modern outlook because they have to survive. If you don't have that will to change and adapt and move on, you will fail. But I think you look at there's Espanyol and Girona, other football clubs within the Catalan region, and then up the coast here from the south of France, Montpellier and Marseille. The club is very keen to take the games on the road. Be selective and when you do it, and maybe take a little bit more time in the arrangements, because I know for a fact it was very difficult to arrange the Camp Nou game. The club works around the clock, 24 hours a day, because when you're dealing with Barcelona, it's one of the biggest franchises in the world, you know, it's so difficult. The media manager, Yannick, is normally the coolest guy in the south of France. He was admitted he was a little bit out of his depth. He was he's one guy dealing with all the media requirements of that game, and the Barcelona media department's got 32 working for it. So he said at the end of it, I'm a little burnt out, I probably need a few days off. But they pulled it off, I must admit. I mean, it was incredible when you consider the amount of organisation that went into that. It's truly remarkable.
Absolutely. And finally, Steve, obviously we spoke about south of the Pyrenees. What about north of the Pyrenees and the effect in France? You mentioned the big name sponsors that are returning to rugby league to sponsor the sport. Obviously, Toulouse are having a decent season in the Championship. Is there a good feel factor with regards to French rugby league as well from everything that's going on in Perpignan?
Yeah, there's a very strong rapport between the Catalan Dragons and Toulouse. And obviously, if Toulouse manage to get up into Super League, that will turn into some kind of rivalry and create a derby situation, which would only be good because it would feed on itself and create more attractive fixtures for spectators and commercial support. As for the rest of France and Northern France, rugby union is king, we know that, but they're going through a tough time. The French national side aren't breaking any pots. and at club level, attendances are down. Directly local here in Perpignan, USAP, who came up last year, have gone straight down again, so that they're suffering big style. I'm not sure we're going to gain any supporters from USAP. You'd rather a Kansist or a Trezist over here. You're one or the other. There isn't much cross traffic. But I think the way that Catalans have been going about this, they're creating a really positive vibe, and the spectators are getting into it. You go down to the Stade Gilbert Brutus, and the kids everywhere. There's a really youthful feel about the place. They create a fantastic match day experience, and it's very attractive to the spectator. They're not too expensive to watch. Match day at the Brutus is the best I've experienced since I was a child, going back to the heyday of rugby league. And I think they are a beacon for rugby league in France, and people are taking notice. When you get these major sponsors coming, like national or multinational companies, getting involved with a small club like Catalan Dragons, it can only bode well for the future. And I think sponsors listen to sponsors. When you get the big names at the club, others follow. And then you're looking at French Elite One clubs. All they need in Limoux or Carcassonne is just a big name supporter or a sponsor like Bernard Gouache, someone similar, and it would take off overnight. I'm quite confident, I must admit. There's a good mood at the moment, and the Catalan Dragons are making waves over here.
Steve Brady there, making his debut on the Talk Rugby League show, and a really impressive match on Saturday between Catalan Dragons and Wigan. Where next, do you think, now for the Catalan Dragons? And don't say Liverpool.
Well, I think, you know, I think the Catalan Dragons could take home games to a variety of places, both in France and in Catalonia. I mean, there's been talk about them playing a game at Girona, hasn't there? Which is another first division Spanish football team, I believe. But also, you know, there's no reason why they shouldn't be playing games in places like, you know, in Provence, in places like Montpellier, Avignon, which are all fantastic places.
And all got potential as well. Marseille, Montpellier, Avignon.
Well, Marseille in the 1950s was a massive rugby league city, and for some strange reason, it's just, you know, gone down the drain since then, and it would be marvellous to revive it.
But they've also got the potential of challenging for the Super League trophy.
Well, there is that as well.
They're in third place, and obviously Saints and Warrington are comfortably in front of the rest of the pack, but Catalan are making a bit of a charge at the minute.
What would happen if they won Super League?
It's a good question, that. I don't know.
Because it would be pretty seismic, wouldn't it?
Well, it would obviously make a massive impact in France, and I think what it would mean is that the, you know, more young people in France would want to investigate playing rugby league, and, you know, some of the, there might even be more French clubs wanting to come and join, you know, the RFL's competitions. I mean, it'd be great. What would be really great would be if Catalans did win the Super League, and in the same season Toulouse got promoted into Super League, because that would really,
I don't think that I would cope with that.
That would really be a turn on for rugby league fans in France, wouldn't it?
Anyway,
I mean, you can't imagine Toulouse winning promotion this year, because you've assumed Toronto will, but it, you know, it's certainly you know, in the next year or two, it's a possibility.
We have had a lot of positivity there, and I do have to have a little bump in the road now. Magic weekend this weekend, ticket sales, does it matter?
Well, we don't know what they are, do we?
No, but
there's been a couple of statements made.
They think they're going to get around 50,000. Now, if they get 50,000, that will still be the lowest in Magic weekend history.
But, I mean, let's hope they do get more. Let's hope they can get over, you know, up to 60. But it doesn't look likely at the moment.
And does it matter?
Yes. Well, I think it does matter, of course. Yeah, yeah.
It's commercial as well. You got to remember the profits. It's,
well, it was Robert Elston's one of his very first decisions, wasn't it, to move the Magic weekend from Newcastle to Liverpool. So if it's only 50,000, then he actually has quite a few questions to answer, I would have thought.
Well, best of luck to the marketing team in the lead up to the Magic weekend. There's still time.
I still hope they get well beyond 50, up to 60, and beyond even that. I mean, that's what we're all hoping for, you know. And it would be disappointing.
I think we've lost focus of what the weekend's about. I thought Newcastle was perfect because, similar to Blackpool, you trip over outside the stadium and you're in the city centre.
You know, and that's what you've got to remember, that there are a lot of people who go for a weekend away. And, you know, some of those might be stag do's. They might just be lads going on a weekend away, a bunch of fans going on. You know, they go for a weekend, not just the rugby. I think with Anfield, I know there are a few pubs around the ground. It's not a night out. I think that's the problem. I think you're going to put a lot of people off in that category because there's not really any enticement to go in that.
There was a real party atmosphere at St James's Park every year, and I think Anfield might struggle to recreate that.
I think you'll still get the purists there.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that Newcastle is probably a more welcoming place for rugby league than Liverpool is. I mean, both Liverpool and Newcastle are very focused on football, but I think Liverpool is exclusively focused on football in a way that Newcastle's probably a bit more open to other sports.
Is it also,
I mean, they've had the Rugby Union European Cup final a couple of weeks ago, didn't they?
Is it also because Newcastle's just about far enough to have a weekend away, whereas Liverpool
isn't? I don't agree with that, because Blackpool's not.
And, of course, Manchester a few years ago used to host Magic Weekend, and that was okay, that.
I think it's proximity, because even the Etihad, it's only walking distance into town centre. City centre, it's like, 15 minutes? Anfield's...
It's got a tram as well, which is
two
stops.
Anfield's what, not? You know, Blackpool, you're straight there. Newcastle, you're straight there.
Well, Cardiff was good in that sense as well, wasn't it? Cardiff, you were right in the city centre there.
Cardiff was probably too far away for some people.
But we still got some quite good crowds, actually. And that was... Those are the days when the remit for the Magic Weekend was to try and recruit new fans. You know, and going to South Wales seemed to fulfil that objective. But again, it's one of those examples where we went and made an initial impression and then didn't follow it up.
The reality, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm sure that when it was announced at Anfield, Robert Elston said it was a financial decision.
I'm sure it was.
Now, all right, fine, but if you lose 10,000 or whatever it is that it looks like they're going to lose...
Well, you're losing 25% of your audience, aren't you?
Yeah, well, what's
now,
more
that's,
important?
That's,
you know.
Pretty disastrous,
and your finances probably then don't go up anyway. So
no.
And we'll cover it next week because there's still time, isn't there, to turn it around, and they might have, you know, the record attendance for a Magic Weekend.
Well, we certainly hope so.
So we will cover it off next week. What next for the Magic Weekend and that kind of thing. But there are some matches taking place on the pitch, and kicking things off is the small matter of Catalan Dragons against Wakefield, which. All of a sudden is a really important game for Wakefield following that defeat to London last week.
Can I be honest about Magic? I'm going to sound really negative. Sorry.
Oh.
But you look at the Saturday fixtures, you're not really looking at them going, wow, I can't wait to watch that, are you?
Well, it culminates with Warrington v Wigan, and I think that's going to be the 21st time since 2015 that Warrington and Wigan have played each other.
Yeah.
So that's just getting to be a bit much. But it'll still be a great game. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
And, of course, you've taken the whole derby out, which is always one you look forward to. And then Cass Leeds, for the past couple of years, has been there. And, of course, they expected Castleford and St Helens to be quite close, but in reality, it might not be.
I think they've fallen lucky with the fixtures in the sense that because of how it is at the bottom and who's involved at the bottom, I mean, Leeds London is the game that everyone wants to see. I mean, who thought we'd be saying that at the start of the season?
Yeah.
And even Hull KR, Salford's appealing in that regard because Hull KR are in the mix.
You say Leeds and London is the game everyone's looking forward to see. It's possibly the most crucial game, but it's probably not the one I'd be most looking forward to seeing.
It's the one I'm looking forward to seeing. Because it's the biggest story.
A story, but is it going to be the best quality?
No, but we've had this debate before. Rugby, we said earlier on, Rochdale Swinton were the most entertaining game at Summer Bash. Don't mean it was the best quality, but in entertainment value.
Probably the worst quality, actually.
It was the best.
Yeah.
See, Catalan Wakefield, I think, will be one of the better games.
It will.
Two really equal teams fighting out at the top of the table. Wakefield, of course, need to bounce back after the London.
You wonder how many fans they'll be playing in front of, don't you, Catalan?
At the end of the day, at this stage of the season, what's happening at the top isn't the big story, because Saints look like they're going to run away with it at the minute. The middle pack are all just in the middle pack, and they are important games, but they don't look like they could be season-defining. Leeds-London could be. Mm. If Leeds lose to London, they are in an absolute hole. and I think,
and it's certainly possible, isn't it?
On what
certainly possible.
Well, look at London. Should have beat Huddersfield, put in a strong display against Wigan, and just came short and have beat Wakefield. Leeds scraped past Hull KR. Admittedly, they're winning by quite a bit. Lost to Castleford, who have been poor recently, for no fault of their own at times, and they lost to someone else.
I mean, I can't remember London losing heavily.
Lost to Bradford.
London haven't lost heavily for a long time. They've been either winning games or only just losing, whereas Leeds have been quite a way away in some games.
Yeah, I mean, even against Cass, that Cass game last week, Cass were okay.
Cass got out of second gear maybe once or twice.
They were okay. Like 7 out of 10.
30 points to 8. And the really interesting thing about that is Leeds played Castleford a few weeks earlier and beat them in Golden, with Golden Point. And it shows how much they've regressed, actually, since earlier in the season. They're not making progress.
Because, to be honest, I think Castleford in that time have regressed as well.
Yeah,
I mean, Cass, to be fair to him, I was looking at the league table and, they're still in the playoffs.
They're fine. Well, Cass are fine.
Cass are fine because they had a good start.
Yeah, they've got enough wins on the board at the moment and they're starting to get players back.
I mean, how important? Let's talk about those two first matches then on Sunday, because I think you're right, Matthew. I think that is the main talking point about Magic Weekend, those bottom three places at the moment. That's a pivotal few hours there in Liverpool. Yeah. Hull KR against Salford, Leeds against London. One of those sides, or two of those sides, could lift themselves out of this.
Yeah. Mm. I mean,
who's more likely to?
See, I think Salford are a good team, but unfortunately they're very inconsistent. So
they're going to be annoyed, though, aren't they?
Hopefully it's not going to hit them too hard. What happened to them at the weekend? Because it could do. They needed to win that game because they deserved it.
Salford could either whack them and put a big score on them, or Hull KR could win.
Well, Salford have got the ability, haven't they? More than Hull KR, really. And if the halfbacks and the forwards turn it on, they should win comfortably.
I fear for Hull KR at this stage of the season. I fear for them. Look, Danny Maguire's been great, but it's clear that he can't play every week, and when he's not there, they just don't look the same. Garbutt coming back is a boost. There's no doubt about that, but they're struggling for injuries in the pack. The players that are playing just aren't quite at the level of the ones they're replacing. I'm not convinced on Hull KR.
What about Leeds then? I mean, where are we with the head coach situation and moving the club forward?
Well, the remarkable thing about Leeds, I think, it goes back to Kevin Sinfield and his comments last week on television, which were really quite remarkable. You know, saying there's something rotten at this club, and it's been allowed to erode for the last few years. Who was he getting at there? Was he getting at Gary Hetherington, the chief exec? Because if you say that something's rotten and it's been allowed to erode, then obviously the bloke who's in charge of it, you would expect them to take responsibility. That means Gary Hetherington. Well, Kevin was making those comments on the night that Leeds were opening their brand new North Stand at a cost of 40, the whole development, including the South Stand, has cost 45 million quid. Now, for him to say there's something rotten, it's been allowed to erode, when it's such a proud night for the club opening those facilities, was the most misjudged statement I think I've heard for quite a long time. If he'd been specific, and if he'd said, the previous coaching regime has just not done the job properly, or something, where he made it clear about who he was talking about, that would have been different, wouldn't it? But when you make that sort of general comment, particularly when it's supposed to be a night of celebration, I mean, it reminded me of Gerald Ratner's comments about, we sell crap, that sort of thing. It's just, Ratner's company went bust after that, and quite deservedly so when he made those comments. So it's just, I don't know why he did it. And
no, I don't.
Who's going to grab the club by the scruff of the neck?
And... Well, it should be Kevin, shouldn't it? Because he's the director of rugby. But what we've not really been told about, I'm afraid, is precisely what the relationship was between Kevin and David Ferner, because clearly Kevin was David Ferner's boss. And, Kevin, when he appointed David, said that, this is absolutely the right appointment. he's going to, you know, do a great job for us. And then 14 matches later, he was absolutely the wrong appointment, and, you know, the only solution was to you know, give him his P45. Well, you know, that calls into question Kevin's judgment, doesn't it, really? Because if you appoint somebody, say he's going to be great in the role, and then he isn't, then what was the logic that made you made that decision?
I mean, you've all mentioned the fact, well, Matthew mentioned earlier that if London win this game, then it's pretty seismic stuff. How would you go into this game if you're Danny Ward?
Well,
they've nothing to lose, have they? It's interesting with London. They've got players that have been approached by other clubs. Jordan Abdul signed for Hull KR. Alex Walker, it seems like, has joined Wakefield. Now, the easy thing would be to down tools for those players. But I think for them, actually, they can go into all these games with nothing really to lose. Oh. And I think certainly in this match, that works massively in their favour, because they go in as the underdogs. They go in with everyone who's in Anfield cheering them on, other than the Leeds fans. Maybe Hull KR, probably, I don't know. Everyone's going to be behind them. All the weight of the world is on Leeds, on everyone
they're
associated
playing
with
that
club.
Way, aren't they? Yeah, they are playing as though they are carrying a millstone around their necks. And you know, you contrast that with Danny Ward at London, who, you know, you could almost get the feeling that Danny regards it as all really quite a big joke. He's never seen without a smile on his face. He obviously enjoys himself enormously. And that must be so much lighter for those players. Those players, you know, whereas at Leeds, you know, if you make a mistake, you know, the ceiling's going to fall in on you. At London, if they make a mistake, oh, well, shrug it off and we'll... Yeah.
Well, I think the mindset of the two clubs will be different in starkly. With London, they'll be fancying their chances against Leeds, whereas Leeds will be looking at London worrying.
Well, they've already lost
them
at home to them, haven't they?
It's an awful place to find yourself in. I mean, anyone who's played sport any level probably knows this. You know, I mean, Alex, as a runner, you might not be quite running like, you know, you can do, and then you can, and you then forget what made you good, what were your strengths, and all you focus on the weaknesses and the concerns. I've had this in my very limited talent as a table tennis player. You can go through awful spells where you just can't hit a ball right.
Well, it's all confidence.
Yeah, it is.
For me, if I have one good run and then I get the confidence back, and then you soar off it for weeks on end, and then you have one bad run, and then you're down in the dumps for ages. Oh, why did I do this? Why did I do that? Why couldn't I run that fast? And that's what these players will be going through.
Do you know where I get that feeling from? Putting out League Express every Monday. And knowing that we've broken some great stories, or we've got some great articles, feature articles, and contrasting that with when it's a, you know, an issue that's a bit more mundane and dreary,
which very rarely is,
but you know, you do get a boost from when people say, "God, that was a real great issue this week," and it's like people saying to you, "Gosh, you played well." You know, if you're a rugby league player, you played well this week, and the team played well. Absolutely fantastic.
Well, it's certainly, like we said, it's certainly an intriguing opening Sunday at Anfield. Just to cover off the two other games on Saturday, Huddersfield against Hull.
I think that's quite a crucial game for both clubs as well, actually, because, you know, Hull are now in the top five. They've got 18 points. They're, you know, level with Catalans. They had a fantastic result at the weekend at Warrington. And let's not forget, Warrington put 60 past them, or 60 or thereabouts, at Hull a few weeks earlier, and they've reversed that result, and fantastic for them. But Huddersfield are not a bad side either. They're still wanting to get further away from the relegation zone and nearer to the playoff zone, and I think that could be a really enjoyable, exciting game.
Yeah, and not from a Huddersfield perspective.
Well, I remember when we first started doing the show, and it was doom and gloom at Huddersfield.
I remember when Alex said they were going to get relegated not too long ago. The reality for Huddersfield is at least one of the teams below them is going to win a game. So the gap between them and maybe two could only be 2 points strong.
If they don't win, yeah.
Yeah. Well, if they can win, on the flip side, and they win, they're then guaranteed to be 5 or 6 points clear of relegation.
And Huddersfield are taking more fans to Liverpool than they took to Newcastle last year.
Yeah.
They're one of the few clubs that's actually achieved their target. Mm-hmm. For
it's all to do with a cowbell.
I think Hull, it will have taken a lot out of them getting that result at Warrington. I know that they got a lot of motivation because Warrington on social media were taking the mick because they'd put 140 points on them in the last two games. So Lee Radford basically said, this is your team talk, go out and prove them wrong, and they did. But I think it would take them a lot, take a lot out of them, and I think Huddersfield could bounce back with a win.
Let's talk about the two headline acts. Warrington, firstly, against Wigan. Speaking of Warrington, any way back for Wigan in that one?
Yeah.
After their defeat, I think Wigan.
I've got to be honest, I've not seen the game yet, Wigan Catalan, and I was really surprised by the result. Surprised, because Wigan have been playing well.
Well, we saw it in the Challenge Cup, didn't we? They ran Warrington very close.
So I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I was talking to Ian Lenigan on Sunday night, actually, quite late, and just about the experience. They took 5,600 fans to Barcelona. And the really interesting thing about that is I was saying, well, Ian, do you think all of those fans will follow you to Liverpool? He says, probably about half, you know. But Barcelona was such a special occasion.
And we didn't really mention this earlier, but fair play to Wigan, because Wigan, they did the match in Australia, didn't they, with Hull as well? And they're very much, you know, they know where they are, their status as a club.
They're trying, but the key things with these are building on them. The Australia trip, liked it, thought a great idea, but I'd like to know what they've done to build off the back of it, or did they just go there and then leave? Because for me, that doesn't not counterproductive, but does it work? I'd like to see. And I'm not saying it hasn't worked, I just don't know.
Didn't they go for the greater good of the game?
Yeah, but the greater good of the game is to grow it. I don't see how just taking a game there and then leaving and not doing anything in that area again really grows it that much. Now if they come back and say TV figures of Super League games out in Australia have gone up, win. Fine, no problem. And if there's more companies from that part of the world looking at investing in the Brit, fine, no problem. But aren't aware that that's
the case. There is some talk, actually, isn't there? And it sort of lingers just below the surface of a team from Perth joining Super League at some stage.
Yeah.
You know, I've had that put to me in the last week or so by one prominent individual saying, you know, that's still a potential move if the NRL doesn't take Perth into its ambit fairly soon, and Perth might look this way, which would be pretty weird, let's face it. You know, that would be a hell of a long way to travel.
Well, you have those two South African sides, don't you, playing in that rugby union competition? Talk about the final of the game on Sunday, Castleford against St Helens, the curtain closer to the whole
Alex's,
Magic
this
weekend.
This is Alex's territory.
Yes, Alex, can Castleford do anything here?
Absolutely. I think Salford showed it. I think Saints were really lucky, not in terms of the decisions or anything like that, but Salford deserved to win the game, I think. And it took a good amount of effort for them to chuck it away in a lot of ways. I thought they were nailed on for the victory, but as we always say, you never write off the Saints, they'll come back. And Cass against Leeds, as I said, they didn't really get out of second gear, they didn't really need to. And of course, Jesse Tenalofeo has gone home, which is a blow, but a necessary blow. Family comes
first. Do we know how long he's going to be away?
Well, that's the thing. No, they didn't put a time limit on it, and they said that in the statement. So it could be weeks, it could be months, who knows. But we've got to deal with it without him. But we are getting players back, and I think we can definitely run them close. Whether we'll do it or not is a different matter, because even though they won the game against Salford, I expect a bit of a bounce back from St Helens.
I think it's a bit of a free hit for Cass. You know, they, in terms of the playoffs, they're still in the mix. They're more than in the mix. They're in the top five.
No one expects Cass to win this game, so if they do, it is, as Matt says, it's free.
If they'd have lost to Leeds, you're starting to think, they'd have now lost. Would that have been five defeats on the bounce?
In Super League, I think.
You're looking at five defeats on the bounce, you're thinking, you know what, we need to win a game. But the fact that they've got the win, they're still in the mix, I think they can go there with nothing to lose, and I think that naturally helps Castleford.
The really interesting thing from St Helens' point of view, they're now 6 points ahead of everybody else. How's that going to affect them? Are they going to start coasting and thinking, well, this is going to be quite easy? They could lose a couple and still be safely at the top of the league. Of course, because the playoff format is different this year, the top team gets a much easier ride into the grand final. So they'll obviously want to stay in that position. But, you know, you do wonder whether that Salford game was a sign that they're taking it a bit easier.
I think we did see that. I think that's what we did see, but they did react well to it.
But they were 16-0 up, actually, at one stage, and Salford came back to...
Well, that's it. I think at 16-0 they thought the game was won. I certainly did. Yeah. I thought, well, this is game over. They looked really good. They scored some great tries, and Salford came back and really hurt them.
All those matches, we should say, will be on TV. On Sky Sports, so good luck to everybody and hope everyone has a lovely weekend in Liverpool. Just a little Championship and League One roundup before we go. Important wins, as we were discussing earlier, at the Summer Bash for Sheffield. Featherstone Rovers, mightily, mightily impressive.
Team of the weekend for me.
There was also an important win for Lee against Widnes. And Halifax beat Bradford, as we discussed earlier. And speaking of Halifax, big announcement at the Shea this morning, as we record this on Wednesday. Shocking news. No one saw this coming. Simon Grix, Matthew?
Yeah. New head coach till 2021. Look, I mean, I think it's a good appointment. He has worked in some good systems. Was at Warrington for a long, long time, where he was very highly valued as a player. I think Lee Breers said he's one of the top three players he's ever played with, which, when you consider Breers as a player,
that's
quite a recommendation, isn't it? But was there, worked a lot with them, has worked under Richard Marshall at Halifax for a number of years. They've won 4 out of 4 under him. He's a Halifax lad. I think he's the first Halifax-born head coach at Halifax since 1977, which is a nice little stat. And he knows what the club's about and where they want to go. So for me, yeah, promote from within. I'm all for it.
Very relaxed press conference as well on Saturday night, I thought.
Yeah, Not interesting. In the Championship this weekend on Sunday, the big game, Featherstone versus Bradford Bulls. I'd be disappointed if that didn't get 5,000 people at Featherstone, you know, because Featherstone get, you know, 2,500 probably, don't they? And Bradford will take a lot of fans there.
We mentioned fans with Bradford and Halifax. Featherstone's showing in the terraces was pretty good as well. Absolutely. On Saturday, I thought
there were a few. I thought Swinton would travelled well.
Speaking about the Championship, just to talk about the bottom half as well, Batley and Swinton picked up crucial wins in their games as well, and I think there's an important game down the bottom end this weekend. Yeah, Barrow against Rochdale.
That's a huge game.
Blimey. Craven Park. Well, we mentioned Simon Grix there. Speaking of head coaches, the big, big news on Tuesday was the announcement of Craig Lingard going from Keighley. Matthew, I'll come to you because you're shaking your head. It's an odd one, this, isn't it?
They would be... they would currently be third in the league with a game in hand against London Scholars, which would mean that they could... they could actually, go second. And he's been sacked.
It does seem surprising, doesn't it?
A man that stood behind them for so long.
Let's not forget, put together, as Keighley have described the team, as a bunch of misfits. That's their words, not mine.
Well, we wish Craig all the best, because Craig is a cracking chap as well. But they've obviously got a plan. Let's hope they have got one, because that's a big call that's been made. Craig Lingard's last game in charge at Keighley saw 1,400 turn up at Kingston Park for Newcastle's win against Keighley. That's a mightily impressive crowd as well.
Just coming on nicely under Finnegan, aren't they, Newcastle?
I think they'll be in the playoff places, won't they, at the end of the season.
Anyway, that's nearly it for this week's Total Rugby League show. TotalRL.com, we should say, the place to go for all your breaking news, not just about head coaches, but everything in the sport of rugby league. But there's just enough time for any other business. And a big good luck, we should say, to everyone associated with the Community Integrated Care Super League, because while we're discussing the Magic Weekend, there's lots of stuff going on there as well. So big good luck to them. Also, in Phil Hodgson's column, talking grassroots this week, he mentions the fact that all 50 NCL clubs so far this season have managed to field teams, which I know might sound like, well done, but not one game postponed. All season for that. Any other business as well? Back chat's back this week.
Yes, myself, Martin, Richard Marshall, and Ryan Briley. So a bit of a mix there. Both spoke well on the futures, actually, didn't they? So there was a news angle, and they were just good in general. They were both
excellent. They're both excellent.
So Martin was all right
and
as well.
Yeah, well, you know. But next week, I think it's probably going to be Ralph Rimmer who's on, the chief exec of the RFL. So
there you are.
We're trying to get that organised, but it looks as though it's going ahead.
Ask him that question that I didn't ask him about a club in Manchester and Liverpool. Okay. If you'd be so kind.
Okay.
Alex, just before you go, just a mention for the NRL. There was obviously a big game last week involving British Rugby League in Australia. Did it come to pass?
In a lot of ways, the English players didn't really show up too well, particularly Sam Burgess, who it was a penalty machine throughout and always arguing with the ref. And I think he got a young Australian, Corey Horsburgh, got the better of him. During the game, and I think while the Souths won, I think it was mainly down to the fact that Cody Walker stole the show. He's an excellent player. But in the NRL, I'd just like to mention that Cooper Cronk has announced his retirement at the end of the year. It's one of the best careers of all time, and it obviously means that Cameron Smith will then be the only one of the big three from Melbourne that will be left. And Cronk is, at the moment, he's with the Roosters. He obviously helped them win the Premiership last year. But this year and last year, Luke Keary has been able to be the prominent half, and Cooper Cronk has been able to just stand back and sort of watch and guide from the field. And that's what we saw in the Premiership win last year, was him coaching on the field, and I think he could have a future there.
You're going to be covering all the developments in the NRL, both on and off the field, in League Express.
Yeah.
Right, excellent. Thank you, Alex. And just before we go, Martin, just quick plug for League Express more generally. What have you got
Magic
lined up?
Magic Weekend this weekend, of course.
Are you going to be able to go? You're not take the office with you?
No, I wish I could. I say this every week, you know, the worst thing I ever did was set up a Rugby League newspaper, because it stops me from going to matches, especially on a Sunday, but actually very often on a Saturday as well. I ought to hand it on to these guys. Let them do it, and I'll just go to the games. Let Matt stay in the office.
One year. Do it for him.
Yeah.
1 year.
No.
Anyway, well, on that note, we started off so lovingly and happily, and that's how we've ended. Well, anyway, a big thank you to Martin Sadler for joining us.
Thank you.
Alex Davis, thank you for coming on. And Matthew Shaw, always a pleasure. But that's it for this week's show. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye bye.